Welcome to my monthly podcast series titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I blog about leading, living, saging, or conscious aging. I'm passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. I also say I'm out to retire the word retirement. We are not retiring, but moving on to something else, and I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. Today, I'm interviewing Elaine Soloway. Elaine lives in Chicago and the author of The Division Street Princess, Bad Grandma, and Other Chapters in a Life Lived Out Loud, Green Nails and Other Acts of Rebellion, Life After Loss and She's Not the Type. The Emmy Award-winning television series Transparent was created by Elaine Soloway's child Jill and inspired by their family. For more information on Elaine, please refer to the bio attached to this podcast. Well, welcome to the series, Elaine.
Thank you so much. I love that word sage that you used early in your intro. That's such a wonderful word.
It is. And if you're not familiar, and I'm going to say this for my listeners, but so I'm part of Saging International, and we spell it SAGE-ING. They copyrighted that word. But the website is saging.org, and it's just a fabulous organization. That's where I've met so many inspirational people, and every other year we have a conference that is so, inspiring just is the word that comes to mind, that I just refer all people, everybody who's into continuous learning should attend. So again, it's saging.org, SAGE-ING, because I love that word too.
Jan, may I ask you a question?
Yes, please.
How old are you?
I will be 60. I have to think. I will be 64 in October.
Okay, because you know, I'm very big on letting people know our ages, because I think that's one thing about conscious aging. I think that was another phrase that you used that I love. So I'm 80 and a half. I will be 81 August the 10th of this year.
Oh, gosh. Wow. Well, and I too agree with you, because in the saging work, we don't talk about how old we are. We talk about how many years of life experience we have.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that that's wonderful. Well, I contacted Elaine after reading her inspiring article in the online publication called Next Avenue. Her article was titled 10 Ways to Be a Rebel After 80, and we will explore some of these ways. And if you're not familiar with this newsletter, I hope you'll find it, Next Avenue. I read almost every article in it, and their tagline is Where Grown-Ups Keep Growing. And I love that. So,
Jen, I just want to interrupt you. I'm sorry, but you're going to find me interrupting a lot. I hope that works with you.
Yes, no, that's Because
if
fine.
I don't tell you right away, I'm going to lose the train of thought.
Yeah, no, that's good.
The original article I submitted was 10 Ways to Be a Badass After 80. Unfortunately, the organization would not allow me to use that word. So it got changed to rebel, which I okayed. Yeah. But I do want people to know that I'm more a badass than a rebel.
Well, I love that. Well, you know, you and I spoke briefly, you know, like a month or so ago, but you have an interesting family, and I just read more about your daughter, Jill, who created, wrote, produced, directed, you know, the Amazon original series Transparent, which has won several awards. Right. She's now going to direct Red Sonja. Is it Red Sonja?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, this is...
But I'm going to correct you in one point.
Okay.
Jill is non-binary. And the preferred gender for non-binary identified people is they, theirs, them. So you, I hope you don't mind my correcting, because I'm learning too.
Sure.
Because I have a family of many, many genders, but a non-binary person would prefer to be called they or them.
Okay, and you know that, and we are all
it's
learning.
Tricky.
Yeah. So how do you say
tricky, I admit.
They are? How would you, you know, instead of she is going to direct, you would say what?
Yeah. You can say Jill is going to direct. That's the easy way out.
Yeah.
Or they are going to direct.
Okay. So
I know it's confusing. I know it's confusing, but this is an education that we're all going through. And for a mother, it's even more difficult because I've had many years of calling my children by other genders. So, and my ex-spouse by another gender. So I'd like to, you know, hopefully people don't get embarrassed or upset when I correct them. But like me, I think people like to know what people like to be called.
Right. And it's all about learning, truly. It's all about, well,
exactly.
Well, yeah.
Exactly.
And what I was going to say is, while this is not exactly on the topic of aging and saging, it is interesting. What would you like to share with our listeners since about your family, since this is part of your life history and experience and, you know,
well, I am going to disagree with you because it is a part of aging.
Okay.
Because
yeah. Okay.
As aging, we can't resist learning new technologies or new language.
Sure.
For example, I'm very tech savvy, but I have friends who absolutely hate using their iPhones or just resist all of that. And we're never going to go back.
Right.
And the
no.
same thing with gender. I think that is a part of aging that older people will say, oh, I can't understand it. What is it? It's crazy. I'm not going to do it. And what I say is that attitude is not going to endear you to your children because there's somebody in your family who's going to come out as gay or trans somewhere along the line.
Mm-hmm.
So it's best that you start being sensitive to how people prefer to be called. So, and that's part of, I think you said earlier about constantly learning.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the topics of not technology and gender preferences.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of them. So about my family. So Transparent is a fictionalized version of our lives. In 2012, my spouse of 30 years revealed to her family, and now my spouse is she, so I will attempt to remember to identify my spouse as she.
Mm-hmm.
So she announced to the family that she was transgender, and at the time we were no longer married, but we were still friends. Our marriage ended after 30 years, and by the time that she announced this, I was in a second marriage. But we were still friends, and it was, and we're a very loving, non-judgmental family. So it was not, you know, it's not like the experiences of many trans people who come out and their families renounce them. But ours is very loving and very welcoming. And my child, Jill, who has been in television before and wrote for 6 Feet Under, said, I think I have a show. And indeed, they did have a show, and that's where it all started. And the thing that we are happiest about Transparent is that we believe it changed the conversation about transgender, mainly because the show is about an older person and how it affects the family, and that a transition such as that does affect the family. But it made the country and maybe the world look at the issue of transgender and how the world could be more loving and easier for that particular person. Does
yeah.
that answer your question?
No, it does. It's fabulous. Yes. And you're right. It is about learning and accepting. And I think your family, the non-judgmental, is very critical,
right.
very important.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Well, let's talk about some of the ways to be a rebel at 80. Whatever
okay.
ways you want to share that you think my listeners would be most interested in, because I found the article so fascinating.
Well, thank you so much. It was well read, but I've learned that anything that has 10 ways in it is going to be well read. One lesson for writers, if you want to get something accepted, put in 10 ways.
Okay.
People love lists.
Yeah.
Anyway, if I can kind of remember it off the top of my head. Now, some of the things that I have, I don't expect others to
sure,
have.
Sure.
And other things I think people can take on. So the thing that I have that most people my age is I have tattoos. And I got one tattoo when I was 60 years old, mainly because I just love body art. I love the conversations that come up with tattoos. And that started kind of my rebellious. And then when I was 80, I got another tattoo of a seahorse. And that one was more significant because I had been trying to learn how to swim all my life, taking lessons from 100 different coaches. And then finally, in 1979, I learned how to swim. And I said, I would get a tattoo at my 80th birthday if I learned how to swim. And so that's where my tattoo of a seahorse is. But it's also a lesson in never giving up. And I think that's a strong point in that particular essay. Is there were three things in my life that I've always tried to do. One was swimming, another playing the piano, but just Rodgers and Hart. And the third, speaking Spanish in just the first tense. Mm-hmm. And now at age 80, I do all of those three things. Very mediocre.
Right.
In fact, my next essay that's going to appear on Next Avenue is called Please Don't Watch Me, because I don't want anyone to watch me doing any of those three things. I do them all kind of in private because they're not good. You know, I swim. I am able to swim with my head out of the water, raising my head, but I swim with fins. I swim slowly. I don't swim a long time, but I can't use swear words, can't I? Can you edit? It was starting with an F. I can't swim. And I also can play, I have a keyboard now, and play Rodgers and Hart, but I use the right hand I got pretty good. The left hand I just do as close as I can, but it's just for myself. And Spanish, I write in a journal every night. And I write the journal in Spanish as best I can. And then I leave blanks where I don't know the word, and then I look them up. But that has helped me learn Spanish the fastest way I can. So as I say, I can do all these things that I've been trying my entire life. And finally, at 8 and a half, I can do them to my satisfaction. I think perfection is the thing that kills movement on the part of people my age. That if they can't be terrific at it, if they can't show off on it, they're not going to do it. And sadly, I have many friends my age who I feel are stuck. Mm-hmm. And I think that stuckness is attached to embarrassment. I think the greatest gift you can give yourself is to make fun of yourself and to be embarrassed, because then you're free. You know, if you really don't care what people think of you, or about being embarrassed, you just can jump into anything. And I, you know, my philosophy in life is leap before you look, because I think too many people spend so much time looking and weighing and measuring, and then the years go by and you say, well, did you ever take that trip? Or did you ever? They say, no, I'm still thinking about it. You know, well, I'd rather you jump into it. And if it doesn't work out, you can always move back. You can always get another job. You're never trapped into something. And people are just afraid to make the move and made a mistake. Now, having said that, I have made many mistakes. I have moved and moved back very quickly. But somebody asked if I had regrets about all the changes in my life. And I said, no, not any regrets, because with my moves and with my jobs, I've met people that are still my friends. I've had experiences that I wouldn't have had. So I think, you know, I think regret is such a shame to attach to anyone that, well, you may regret it, you know, but you never know what's on the other side of a decision. What if it's better? And if you never make that decision to go on the other side of something, you'll never know. And I think that's terribly sad to me. You know, there's so much to explore. Now, can I tell you my latest exploration?
Please do.
Right. So I have had two golden retrievers in my lifetime. And one died in, I think, about 2000. and two, and another one died in 2012. One died at age 12, another at age 14. And since then, I have not had a dog, but I lust after dogs. And my building has a lot of dogs, and I go to a dog park every afternoon and just sit, and I'm like a voyeur. But finally, I decided I'm going to get another dog. So currently, I'm doing my due diligence. I've applied to very no-kill shelters in Chicago, and I'll be looking for a male, older, small dog. And so I'm also posting all my activity about the dog on Facebook, so people are monitoring me and expecting a photo, which I will give, because as often said about my leaping, is the train has left the station. There's no going back. I'm going to get a dog. So that's my very next new thing is getting a dog. Do you have a dog, Jan?
We do. We have two Wheaton Terriers.
I love Wheaton Terriers.
Yeah, and one is, we've had four, but one is very special. Wow. And I say that, you know, when something happens to me, my husband will be sad. But when something happens to Grover, this one dog, my husband will be devastated. He can live without me, but I'm not so sure he can live without this dog.
And how many pounds do your dogs weigh?
Grover's a little chubby, so he's about 45 pounds. And then the other one is taller and skinnier, and he's probably about 38.
I'm going to try and get like no more than like 25 pounds.
Sure.
I am very, very small myself. I'm only 4'9".
Uh-huh.
Everyone is urging me, especially my child, to get a tiny dog. Theirs is just 10 pounds, but I don't know if I can go from a golden retriever size to a 10 pound dog. So I'm going to try for something. Maybe I will be open to really tiny dogs, but
sure.
I'm going to allow myself to go up to like 25, 30 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, what I did today, I'm sorry I keep interrupting you, I think everything I have to say is good advice. So you'll just have to.
It is good advice. Down. Yes.
So one of the problems about getting a larger dog that you can't put in a carrier is, how do you use Uber or Lyft, which I use all the time when I'm not walking. So I went online, and of course, I put in, how do you get a dog in Uber and Lyft? And there's all kinds of suggestions how to do it. So now I've got that point settled, then the size thing doesn't matter as much. Okay, now it's your turn.
Right, exactly. Well, honestly, and when I post this podcast, people will be able to see the great photo that you sent of yourself. I think it's just absolutely inspiring. I love it, Elaine.
Thank you.
To what do you attribute your attitude on life? I mean, what advice would you give to my listeners? I mean, I know you've shared, I love this leap before you look and take chances and, forget about this regrets and don't worry about being embarrassed because you're free, But where do you think this came from? I mean, your parents or your friends or your surroundings, where did you develop this great attitude?
Jen, I wish I knew the answer to that question.
You could sell
but
it.
I could sell it. I could be a billionaire. But all I can tell you is that I am grateful every effing morning when I wake up. I say a prayer every morning before I got to bed. And most of it is about gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
I have the most incredible children who take really good care of me and help support me. And I have the most incredible group of friends that I'm just so grateful to. I think it's just that gratitude, that when you have gratitude, it just allows you to take more chances, to be open, to be curious, your world will expand. I think if one goes through a life of jealousy, regrets, why did other people have it, then you're kind of doomed to living in a death in a way. But if it's the opposite, if you live in gratitude, openness, curiosity, there, it's just whatever days I have left, and I mean, as I said, I'm fortunate, I'm touching wood over here, that I'm in good shape. Whatever days I have left, I'm grateful for them. But I also feel that I have some responsibility in that. And so I use social media and my lack of shyness to share everything that I do. Every morning, I read online several newspapers, and because I'm a liberal, I post paragraphs to all these issues. Some are political, some are not, just whatever strikes my fancy, and put it on Facebook. And I love the people I've met through that, and the conversations and the debates that have started because of that. If any of your listeners are on Facebook, they can look me up. And if we have similar values, I'd love to be your friend. If we have different values, which are very apparent on my website, then, you know, we'll just have to live separately, I'm
right.
afraid.
No.
So.
I know, it's gotten very difficult these days, and I totally agree with you. Well, you know, what's interesting is I read and loved your recent article in Next Avenue titled 20 Days of 20 Notes, Gratitude Project.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Please explain the project, and then I will share my version of it, because I also make, sell, send postcards. So cards are kind of my thing, and I'll kind of explain how I use that. But explain your project. I thought it was fascinating.
Well, thank you. Well, actually, what happened is what I wrote about. I keep stamps on hand just for the occasional time you use it. As I said, I'm very techie, so I do everything online. But the order that I got of stamps was of Gregory Hines and the African-American dancer. And they were so beautiful that I just didn't want to tuck them up in my closet until I used them. So I just thought, you know, I'd love to share that stamp and some of my thoughts with friends. So I had to think about who of my friends and would say, I'll be right there if I called them in an emergency, and who was I grateful that they were in my life. So that was easy. And I've already gone beyond the 20. I'm having a whole new set of stamps. And As expected, all the recipients were really touched by it, wrote me back, said they were going to do it. But the only thing I have to warn you is it's very time consuming. You forget how long it takes to write with a pen because I'm so used to typing everything out that you have to, you know, consider that this is going to take some time. Mm-hmm. But I have all my cars and my implements and everything set aside so that when I have time and the urge, because the 20 are already passed now to send it to a new one, but everybody loves it. And, you know, I will continue to use it on an occasional basis.
Yeah.
So what are you doing, Jen?
You know, it's kind of interesting because, so my first career, I taught at a small college in Iowa for 30 years. And, you know, after 30 years, my kids were, I have three grown sons and they were just finishing college. And I thought, but I had to commute an hour each way to my job. And so 2 hours a day, and we don't live in Iowa because traffic's bad. It was just, you know, 50 miles away, so 100 miles a day. And so I just thought, you know, I want to do something different. So that's where I started. I joined a leadership development firm and started kind of my own business. And now I'm focusing on kind of the second half of life. But before, I didn't want to tell anyone that I was really and I use the word retired because after 30 years, there was kind of a ritual. But in order to move on, I really didn't tell anyone because I had watched how we had this president who I thought was very, very good, very charismatic, very effective. I liked him very much. And he was retiring after 12 years. And I watched how people just kind of, like all of a sudden, when they knew he was going to be leaving, they didn't even seek out his opinion, you know. And they just act like you're already dead. And to this day, I would still seek out his opinion on certain things. Well, anyway, so before I announced that I was leaving, I thought I did talk to the dean in private, and I said, and he was shocked because he's like my age, and he couldn't believe it. And but he said, you know, you can do what you want. And I said, well, can I hold off announcing it as long as possible? Because after 30 years, I couldn't put up with people just acting like I had already died. Okay.
Right.
So I was going to Chicago for a conference downtown, and I actually was president of the conference, and so they were paying all my expenses. So I could have flown, but if I flew, I'd have to be at the airport so much earlier and all of that. So I intentionally took what we call the mega bus, the bus from Des Moines to Chicago, because I knew it was going to take me 5 to 6 hours. And I had a project. And so what I did is I took the faculty staff directory that gives everybody's kind of campus mailbox, which is free, you just inner office, I guess it'd be inner office mail. And then I took a bunch of postcards that I make, and I make postcards with quotes and different expressions.
Oh, wow.
And I took, anyway, to make a long story short, I wrote in the going to and from Chicago, so like a 12-hour trip, I wrote about 200 postcards.
Oh my goodness.
I didn't mention, you know, that I was leaving. I looked for a way to thank them for something. It didn't matter if they worked in maintenance or technology or clerical or the food service. I just looked for people who really I had a relationship with that I could cite an example. You know, I just want to thank you for, and I dropped 200 of these in the mail when I got back. And I couldn't have done that project on a plane. I mean, it just, you know, I needed like 12 hours. So I come back, I drop it in the mail, and that was probably in March. And this now was it was 2011. I left in 2011 after 30 years. But it was March, and I got a lot of thank yous. People really acknowledged it, but I only had a couple people say to me, you know, are you okay? You know, are you ill? Is something going on? And I said, no, I just wanted to thank you. You know, and they said, well, that was so nice. Well, then it was about a month and a half later. It was about late April when I announced that, or the college announced that, you know, I was going to be retiring after 30 years. And then people were like, oh, now we get it. Now we get it. You know? But I wanted I wanted them just to, you know, receive my, you know, note of grace. I could move on.
Oh, interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because see, for me, that's 30 years, they were my family. These people, they were my family. And, and so anyway, it was kind of my way of letting go. And, well, anyway, Elaine, you know, our time's kind of coming to an end, but I always like to ask, what else should I have asked you that our listeners need to know? Other words of wisdom, the main things about this topic that you think are critical, are key?
I think trust your intuition. I mean, I think that's one of the things that is trust your intuition. 90% you will be right. 10% you'll be wrong. There will be times when you're completely wrong, and that's okay too, because that teaches you something. But I think, you know, by the time we're this age, or maybe even your age, your intuition is based on all these years of experiences. So it's not like, you know, just an odd thought. You have you've done the research, the due diligence, everything. You have all of this research and experiences behind you. So your intuition is pretty good.
Yeah.
Because if you've lived this long and you've been, you know, just successful in life, and I don't mean monetarily, I mean with social relationships, trust yourself. 90% you'll be right on target. 10% you'll be wrong, but you'll live through it.
That's excellent. Well, Elaine, you've given us so much to think about. I want to thank you again. The emphasis in this series is on learning and how to make the best rest of life the best of life. And may the rest be the best for you, Elaine.
Thank you so much.
I will continue to follow you on Next Avenue.
Okay.
And I'm not a big Facebook person because I blog and it's hard to stay on top of all that. But I definitely will follow your work.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Okay.
And when this podcast is up,
Yep.
I hope there's a link so yep. I can share it with my social media pages.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I will. I interview a lot of people. You know, I kind of batch the interviews and then I release one a month.
Right.
And so you definitely okay. will know, and I encourage you to push it out. Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.